This interview with Joanna Dunkley of Princeton University in the United States is part of the Jodcast. For the full show, go to www.jodcast.net. Jo, welcome to the Jodcast.
Hi there, thank you.
So can you perhaps give us a bit of background and tell us what exactly is the cosmic microwave background, the CMB as astronomers call it?
Sure, so the CMB, it's basically the first light we can see of the universe. It's light that has been travelling to us for about 13 billion years, since almost the beginning of the universe, in fact. And it's basically like a relic, it's like a picture, it's like a snapshot of the universe when it was only a few hundred thousand years old. It comes from a time, so when the universe, we think the universe came from a Big Bang, a really, really hot, dense state, when it's just a very, very hot, dense universe.
Right.
And so we see light that basically has been travelling since the universe was just a few hundred thousand years old, travelling all the way through space until we see it now.
So why does it come from that particular time?
So yeah, that's a really good point. Broadly, we live in an expanding universe that has been cooling down as time has progressed. So as you go, as you wind time back to zero, back to the Big Bang, the universe would be very, very hot. So we think that the universe then started to cool down.
Because it's expanding, there's more space.
Exactly. And it's very hot and very energetic. And as it expands and cools down, then you can actually start forming atoms. So everything that we see around us now is made up of atoms.
So they're the neutrons and protons and electrons.
Exactly, yeah.
Joining together in a little gang.
All joined together in a little gang, exactly. All stuck together to make atoms that then we're all made of.
And they couldn't exist when the universe was very hot.
Exactly, because when you heat up an atom beyond a certain point, then you can basically split up the electrons from the protons and neutrons in the middle. And so you get this whole just like sea of electrons and protons all zooming around, not making atoms because they're not hot enough.
Right, so a bit like on the surface of the sun, a plasma.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So the whole universe was pretty much like that.
Yeah, so when we look at the sun now, for example, the light that we see from the sun is just travelling through the space in between us and the sun until they hit our eyes, so we can see it. But if you put a whole load of those split up electrons and protons in between us and the sun, for example, the light wouldn't be able to travel straight to our eyes.
So it sort of bounces off the electrons and the protons?
Exactly, yeah. So it'd be bouncing off them, would be sort of scattered off in all different directions.
So a bit like fog or mist scatters the light?
Yeah, huge great fog in between us and what we're looking at.
And so the fog is from the time when the universe was quite warm and you had all that those split up atoms?
Yeah, until exactly the point when atoms could then form. You'd combine all the electrons and protons together, form an atom, and then at that split point in time, from that point onwards, then light could then travel through space, because space is now made up of cooled down atoms that passes straight past the atoms and through space. So light will just travel in a straight line wherever it's going in the universe. It's throughout the universe and will just travel until it hits someone's telescope. For us, it's travelled for 14 billion years until it's hit our telescopes here on Earth.
That's quite a long time for it to be travelling in.
It's a really long time. It's kind of, I mean, it's in a way, it kind of comes to a sad end when it hits our telescopes. It tells us a huge amount about the universe, but its journey is over when it gets to us.
So these photons of light that you're picking up with your telescope, they're coming from this time, a few hundred thousand years after the Big Bang,
yes.
About 14 billion years ago.
Yes.
So what do they actually tell you, apart from you've detected light? Is there something else you can get from them?
Yeah, they do. So you're essentially taking a snapshot of the universe when it was just a few hundred thousand years old.
Does it all look the same everywhere? Or?
Almost the same, but not quite. That's the really crucial thing, is that the first point, I guess, is that it looks almost the same everywhere. So this light is 3 degrees Kelvin, which is minus 270 degrees centigrade.
Very cold.
Very, very cold. And the fact that when we look in each direction in the sky, we see the same temperature to a very good degree tells us it's good evidence that the Big Bang did happen, that our idea about the expansion of space from a point that did happen. But more than that, the light is not completely uniform. So it's not all exactly minus 270 degrees.
Right.
It has tiny, weeny fluctuations, a millionth of a degree difference in different directions in the sky when we look out.
So that's incredibly uniform. It's pretty much the same everywhere then, but just these very, very small differences between them.
Yeah, And that was the most exciting thing. When this was first discovered, this was a really important piece of evidence for the Big Bang, this uniformity. When it was first discovered, there was no evidence for these slight deviations. The main result was that it was uniform over the whole sky.
And that was in the 1960s, I think.
Yeah, that was 1960s. So actually, it was a lucky discovery. It had been predicted that this radiation should exist, but in the sort of 40s, 50s, people didn't think that it would be observable. But then in the 1960s, these two men, Penzias and Wilson, were just carrying radio observations of our galaxy. And they basically detected this offset, basically an extra little signal they couldn't explain. And you'd expect to see more radiation if you point a telescope towards the middle of our galaxy than away from it.
Because our galaxy gives out radio waves and microwaves.
Yeah, so there's stars, there's dust, there's all sorts of things that should be sending out microwave radiation. But wherever they looked with the telescope, even at things they thought should send out more radiation, they saw the same amount, regardless of which direction in the sky they were pointing a telescope. They first of all thought that this was just an error with their telescope. They thought that this was just something to be fixed. They thought that they had pigeons nesting in their telescope. They thought it was the pigeons creating this spurious signal.
The pigeon droppings, perhaps?
Yeah, exactly. Well, first of all, the pigeons, and then the pigeon droppings. And they tried to get rid of the pigeons, but even when they got rid of them, they still saw the signal. And discussion with theorists who had predicted this microwave background signal made them all realise that if they detected it, they made the first detection. And that was 1964, I think.
So that was a lucky discovery, really.
Yeah, it was. An amazing discovery, because that was just huge validation for the idea that the Big Bang happened.
And that gave us this measurement of the uniformity, this microwave background radiation was the same in all directions.
Yes, and it had a particular, if you look at how much light you get at different frequencies, it has a thing called a black body spectrum. Basically, it's a very particular pattern of light that you only get if all the universe had been basically squashed together in one point and had contact with each other. Like if you put a cube of ice into a glass of water, you have to have everything in contact to have this particular kind of emission of light. You wouldn't get this particular pattern of temperatures if you hadn't had this hot, dense state in the early universe.
Okay, so things moved on from the 1960s and that original detection. What was the next big thing that happened in cosmology?
There are other ways of measuring cosmological properties of our universe. But in terms of the CMB, the microwave background, COBE was the next big step. It was in 1990 around then. It was a NASA experiment, a NASA satellite, to measure the microwave background over all space, so looking at every direction of the sky, and to really go after the little fluctuations, the little ripples of the temperature around that uniform 3 Kelvin.
Right, so comparing different directions and seeing if some directions are slightly
have slightly more and slightly less, and that's really important because the universe we see around us today is very irregular. It's full of people like us. And it's stars, galaxies, clusters of galaxies. It's not smooth. You need some mechanism of clumping them into structure.
The universe is quite clumpy.
The universe is clumpy. And you need some mechanism of making that happen. So say you start from a squishing all the universe down into a very hot, smooth ball of electrons and protons. Then you need to get that to somehow form structure later on in the universe. Well, what we think happened is that you actually would have to have tiny weeny ripples in that early on hot dense state.
Right, so there were slightly more atoms in one place than there were in another.
Yes, I mean at that point not atoms, just
the electrons and protons.
Yeah, slightly more in one place than another, so that later on gravity could take the regions where there was slightly more matter, and gravity could then pull that region together.
Right.
To grow over billions of years to form eventually stars and galaxies. So by looking at the little tiny ripples at that very early point, we know that they will then grow towards being the structure we see today. You get slightly different ripples, so a different pattern of little fluctuation, depending on what the universe is made of and what mechanism could have caused those ripples to form in the first place. So the things we'd like to know are what's the universe made of, and how old is it, and how long it's been expanding for. And if you put in like a different amount of matter in the universe, or if it has a different age, it will leave a different signature of little tiny ripples in the temperature of the microwave background.
Right. Okay. So by looking at that particular signature of ripples, you can work out how old the universe is, perhaps.
Yeah. And its contents, what it's made of. So if it's made of normal matter.
So that's the stuff that we're made of.
That stuff will be like, exactly. So there's this, what we've managed to measure with the CMB are remarkably precise quantity values of things that we don't necessarily understand.
Right. Well, that's good, because science is all about looking at things that we don't understand and trying to work out what's going on.
Yes, exactly. We need to try and understand what we don't understand. So we think that the universe is made up of, yes, normal matter like us and our planets and our stars that we see around us in the sky. So that's what we call normal matter. One of the key measurements we get is the total density of the universe. On average, how many atoms there are per cubic centimetre or cubic metre or some volume. So take a volume of the universe, how much matter is there in it? What's its density?
I would guess it was not very dense.
Not very dense. Yeah, it comes out to be about, on average, about 3 hydrogen atoms every cubic metre. So we measure that total density by looking at the pattern of these temperature fluctuations very accurately. So you can then say, well, there's a missing amount of matter. Dark matter is, well, we don't know what it's made of, what kind of particles it is. We just observe its effect, but it appears to be a sort of matter which behaves gravitationally normally. Like if you put a whole clump of dark matter somewhere, we'd expect other matter to be pulled towards it in the same way that we're pulled towards the Earth, or the Earth is pulled into orbit around the Sun. The gravity seems to be the same.
Right, so it would help make the universe a bit more clumpy.
Yes, yes. And so if we look at the little patterns in the microwave background, then you would need to have this dark matter there, yeah, to make it clumpy. But there's also this stuff called dark energy as well, which is also confusing as cosmologists and is a really important question at the moment. Because dark energy seems to be making our universe expand faster. It's like stuff that has negative pressure, stuff that's pushing the universe outwards.
Right, so making galaxies move away from each other.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas normally you would expect, if you just had normal matter that we know and understand, you wouldn't expect them ever to be pushed apart because they're made of mass, which gravitationally pulls towards each other. So from the microwave background, we measure it to be 74% of the universe is made up of this stuff.
And these results come from the instrument that you're working on now?
Actually, yes, yes. So Kobe back in 1990 gave us the first measurement of what these quantities could be. So it gave us a pretty good estimate. Just even by noticing that finding these fluctuations existed was a key advance. Now this experiment, WMAP, that I'm working on, has basically measured the microwave background to so much more precision that we're able to figure out these numbers much, much better.
Just out of interest, where is WMAP?
WMAP, yeah, it's a million miles away. It's a NASA satellite that was launched in 2001, and it's at a point called L2, which is a stable point. It's basically opposite the Earth to the Sun. So if we go out from the Earth, the opposite direction to the Sun, a million miles. So beyond the Moon.
Yeah, the Moon's only about a quarter of that distance or so.
Yeah. So it's far away. It took about 3 months to get there after it was launched from the States. And so it's sitting out there and pointing away from the Sun. So it's important that it doesn't look at the Sun because it's trying to measure light from everywhere else.
And you said it was trying to look at things at -270 degrees,
yeah.
So you don't want to look at the Sun.
You don't look at the Sun. You need to look away.
It's a very delicate instrument.
Yeah, and so it can measure these little deviations about the uniform temperature of a millionth of a degree.
That's very impressive. A lot more accurate than a thermometer you'd have at home.
More accurate than a thermometer. It can also measure its polarisation. So when light scatters off, you know, the bonnet of a car or something, that's polarised. And when we use our sunglasses, they basically help to remove some of the glare by filtering out different polarised directions of the light. So basically, if you look at, there's more light coming from different one direction than from twist around 90 degrees. There's different amounts of light. So you can measure how polarised light is if you make your measurements in the right way. You can measure both its temperature and its polarisation.
So what does the polarisation tell you about the light? Presumably it's not reflecting off a huge celestial car bonnet.
No, we think that the polarisation comes from, two points in time. First, we do expect there to be both little ripples in the temperature and the polarisation. Because it's not uniform, slightly more matter in some places than others, figure out that you should get a polarised signal. But actually as well, you expect the light to be slightly polarised again at a point in the cosmic history when the stars first turn on. So we think that about 400 million years after the Big Bang, the first stars started to light up, to ignite.
Pretty soon after the Big Bang in.
Yeah, so if we think of the whole age of the universe as 14 billion years, 400 million years is young. So we think stars have been around for a pretty long time. You expect the microwave light passing, just traveling through the universe, when the stars first switch on, that gives an extra boost to how polarized the light is.
Right, so the stars are affecting that signal that you're looking at from the cosmic microwave background.
Yes, and so we can get a handle on when those stars first switched on from measuring the polarization.
That's actually very interesting that you can do that from just looking at how polarized this light is.
Yeah, it's really, the trouble is it's much harder because it's 100 times, the signal is 100 times fainter than the temperature signal.
And the temperature signal is this 1/1000th of a degree difference.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's 100 times fainter than that.
It's small, very small. So it's only been the last few years that we've been able to do this. And so that's, I guess, one of the new results from WMAP. WMAP released 1 year of data back in 2003.
So that was the first year of results that had been all compiled and analysed and processed.
Yeah, so that was a year of processing results. It was from a collecting data for a year, and they released the data in 2003. And they had made polarisation measurements then, but hadn't measured them in so much detail. The focus was temperature measurements.
Right, they're the easier things, I guess, to get than this signal, which is 100 times fainter.
Yes, and that was what the framework was optimised to work best for measuring temperature deviations. And that gave sort of unprecedented accuracy on the contents of the universe, the expansion rate, and how it's developed, basically, over the 14 billion years. So those precise numbers were a huge advance. Earlier this year, the team released results in March from 3 years of analysis and from better measurements of this polarization signal.
There was the first year results, and then there were the third, so 3 years worth of results.
Yes.
Was there a reason why there wasn't a 2 years worth of results in the middle?
Well, one of the main reasons was that the big advance in the 3 year results was measuring maps, so measuring the polarization over the whole sky, so making maps of how polarized the light is over the whole sky. And because of how small the signal is, it's said 100 times fainter than the temperature signal, it's much harder. And so analyzing the data requires a lot more advances in understanding all the experiments very, very well.
Right.
Because basically we're looking through the galaxy. We're sitting in the Milky Way galaxy and we're looking out at light that's coming in from outside the galaxy. And so our galaxy has stuff in it that's sending out microwave light at us too, so we have to clean up very carefully.
Right, so it's a bit like trying to observe the stars from a large city with all its light pollution.
Yes.
You've got to try and almost subtract away all the lights that the city's pumping out into the sky.
Yes.
You're trying to remove all that extra light to look at the very faint things in the sky.
In the sky, yeah. So you have to work very carefully, work out how much light's coming from, you know, the city to get past it and to look at the signal we want. So that was a major advance, was to really be sure that the signal we're seeing, this polarized signal, didn't come from our galaxy, because the galaxy is very comparable, the signal from our galaxy, the signals coming outside from the Big Bang. So that took a while. But in doing so, not only have we now got a better handle on when those first stars switched on, as I was saying, that's one thing we learned from polarization, but with that polarization data and 3 years more of collecting the temperature data, we're trying now to understand what happened before the CMB formed, in the first, you know, trillionth of a second of the Big Bang. That's the next stage of what we're trying to do in cosmology, I guess, or one of them.
Right, that's very impressive, looking back before this light actually set off.
Yeah, trying to infer backwards what happened before, how you could see the pattern, or how that pattern could have formed from the physics that was going on during the first fraction of a second. There's one fairly simple to understand test, in that we're looking for how big these ripples in the temperature or the polarization are. And what we can do is split them up into different scales, so we can see how big the ripples are on big scales in the sky. So can you imagine looking out over the whole sky and splitting up into patches?
Right.
Split the whole sky into 4 patches, or 100 smaller patches, or 1,000 even smaller patches. What we would expect is, on average, to have the same size ripples on different scales of the sky.
Right.
There are physical processes that will then mess that around a bit, but on average, we'd expect it from the very early universe to perhaps have the same amount of ripples on big scales as small scales.
And is that what's measured?
Well, what we're now measuring are the first indications that it's not quite true that you have slightly smaller ripples on smaller scales. Currently, our best explanation for what was happening in the first fraction of a second of the universe is a thing called inflation. So we think that, or this is an idea that's been around since the 1980s, as an explanation for what was going on at the Big Bang. So space expands exponentially fast, which means it's expanding faster than the speed of light during the first trillionth of a second. And so you're expanding space incredibly fast, much faster than currently we think space expanding, but at a much slower
right.
rate. So this inflation would be much, much faster expansion for a very short period of time. If this scenario happened, if inflation happened, which is something we're really trying to test, you would expect this really tiny difference, this very small signal in terms of how non-uniform the power or how big fluctuations are on different scales.
So by comparing predictions from theoretical cosmologists to what you actually measure on the sky from the universe, and you've been able
so
to...
So actually, it's tantalising. We talk about things and how confident we are in measuring something. At the moment, from what we observe with the new WNAT data, we can say probably with 95% confidence that there is slightly less power at smaller scales, giving that impression that inflation might have happened. It's rare that you can say something definitely happened, but you can say something with more and more confidence. And statistically, we have good evidence. Everything we see is pointing with inflation. That's what many cosmologists are working on at the moment, are looking for more signatures of inflation.
Will WMAP be able to detect that, or is it just too faint a signal to pick up?
It's very faint. What we can do is put up a limit. It's possible that if the signal is big, if the energy of inflation was big, which theoretically is possible, that with another few years of observing the WMAP, we could see the signal.
And that would be very exciting.
It'd be very exciting. It's probably more likely that the next generation of CMB experiments are more likely to see it. The experiments dedicated to measuring the polarization and measuring it at a very, very high sensitivity.
Anyway, all this detective work sounds very exciting.
it is very exciting. And it's having this experiment with such sensitivity and such precision, it means we can really nail down these numbers very well and start learning. And the idea that we can learn about the first trillionth of a second of the universe.
And it's just staggering to me.
It is staggering. I mean, but it also leaves obviously a huge number of open questions. I mean, we don't know why. Even if this inflation happens, we need to understand why. If this dark energy exists, we need to understand what it is. There's an awful lot of questions we need to answer. But at least a simple picture is falling into place.
Well, all these questions are what makes science exciting. And the next generation will hopefully answer some of them, and probably to produce a whole lot more.
Yeah, but that's the fun of it, isn't it?
Yep. Right, well, thank you very much for talking to us.
No problem at all, it was a pleasure.